Negative headlines from two of our most important neighbors, that is Pakistan and Sri Lanka, are now competing in our front pages and on our TV screens with Ukraine, with the Ukraine-Russia war. Now, two countries in our neighborhood, both very important for India for various reasons, different reasons, are today going through a deep crisis, which is as political as it's economic. Now, we tend to talk about politics a bit more than economics, for the simple reason that all economics ultimately is rooted in politics, even in a non-democracy, but in democracies, even most of all. Even if democracies are partial democracies, imperfect democracies, in any case, there is no such thing as a perfect democracy, but even in very imperfect democracies, economics all comes out of politics. So in Pakistan as well as Sri Lanka. So first look at Pakistan. What's happened in Pakistan? We've been watching Pakistan's per capita incomes coming down. We've seen Pakistan's deficit, budget deficits going up. We've seen Pakistan's foreign exchange reserves dwindling. Now just left to pay for a few weeks of imports. In fact, Pakistan has been in dire need of an IMF bailout. Once again, this is something which is in common between Pakistan and Sri Lanka. Both are in dire need of an IMF bailout. In Pakistan's case, IMF has now said that we are suspending the program for now. Let there be a proper, stable government in Pakistan. In Sri Lanka's case, the government itself right now is on the ropes. As we speak today, Gotabaya Rajapaksa's government has lost its majority in parliament because many members of his own party have also gone away, saying that they can't be party to this kind of governance. So, both countries, how bad are things there? Look at Pakistan. I draw some inspiration, knowledge, wisdom, and data from this thread of tweets by Professor Shahram Azhar of Bucknell University. He's a PhD from Amherst, PhD in economics from Amherst. And he gives us some data to show how bad Imran Khan's economic management has been. So see his first graphic. Thank you very much, Professor Azhar. I'm borrowing your graphics, which are based on World Bank data. As you say, if you see the progression of Pakistan's per capita GDP for almost 20 years, you will see that generally, year upon year, it has gone up. Only one year it had gone down a little bit. That is the 2008-2009 year. And you can understand 2008 was the global financial crisis. Just a little bit. Now, for the past 4 years, looks like it's in a free fall. And these 4 years are very important. Because 2018, in fact, somewhere in the middle of 2018 is when Imran Khan came to power. 2018, you see the point marked on the graphic where Imran Khan is sworn in. But even before that, because there was instability, because it was evident that Nawaz Sharif's government was being thrown out, and it was being thrown out by the so-called umpires or the boys or the bosses in GHQ, because they wanted then to install Imran Khan in his place. You can see the economic decline started then, and since then it's been a free fall. It's not been a free fall over 1 year. That is the COVID year that many countries have suffered from, including India, quite steeply, in fact, in case of India. But in this case, this is almost like a free fall. So you can see that under Imran Khan, Pakistan's per capita GDP in 3.5 years, it's not even been 4 years since he came to power, has already lost almost one third of its value. That is a steep fall. Pakistan is not used to it. This has never happened in Pakistan's history. So that is what, first of all, creates a big trouble in Pakistan. Then at the same time, if you look at the next graphic from Professor Azhar, you can see inflation is going up. And then this is deeper analysis of who is inflation affecting more, because inflation affects everybody. So you can see the two lines there. The red line is the line for the poorest people, for the poorest quintile. So inflation is affecting them most of all. Why? I guess because inflation is the steepest when it comes to food in Pakistan. That is edible oil, sugar, atta, wheat flour, things like that. Those have all gone up very heavily. And at the same time, currency depreciation has taken place at a level which is not at all normal or orderly or helpful. Sometimes if currency depreciates a little bit, your exports are helped because you then become more competitive. Your exporters become more competitive. But what's happened in this case is the currency has been in free fall. So when Imran took over in 2018, Pakistan's rupee was about 118.118 to the dollar. Now it is about 180 to the dollar. So this is a very steep fall. Usually a currency, particularly in a developing country, should decline. It's healthy for the currency to decline or depreciate in accordance with the differential of inflation rates between, say, that country and the country that prints the dollar, that is America. So if America has 2% inflation and you have 8% inflation, then your currency should depreciate by about 6%. But this is very precipitous depreciation. This does not conform to any theory of economics or political economy for that matter. Then look at the stock market. That's the other graphic, stock market. And this is also something that Hussein Haqqani has been pointing out. Even now, after 3.5 years of Imran Khan, stock market, that is Karachi Stock Exchange, KSE, has still not reached the level it had reached in 2017, right? So in 5 years, the stock market has not even got back to where it used to be in 2017. That tells you there is trouble. In fact, 2017, you can see KSE was at about 52,000. Today, it's about 44. So that tells you also the story of the larger decline in the economy. And once again, now you can see trade deficit is going higher and higher. And what has the government done? Government, instead of trying to discipline itself, has actually thrown a lot of subsidies. Imran Khan launched this scheme whereby he said a large number of people, that is supposedly poorer people, could go to their grocery shops and buy their sugar, atta, and edible oil, etc. at 30% discount, which the government will pay for. Now, the government is bankrupt already. How would the government pay? Government was already sitting with IMF negotiating the conditionalities. He's also giving heavy subsidies for fuel, that is petrol and diesel. That's the reason once you convert in dollar terms, petrol and diesel in Pakistan is much cheaper than in India. Now, if the government there thinks they can afford to do it, it's fine. But the fact is they can't afford to do it. So this is one leader with strong dictatorial tendencies, not listening to anyone, just quoting Islam or something from the Holy Scriptures to anybody who disagrees with them, or blaming all his problems on some foreign interference. And that is where this combination of extreme populism, strong dictatorial tendencies, and also a kind of religion-fed nationalism has led Pakistan's economy into such a disaster. Now let us see who can put it back together. Now, if you think Pakistan's bad, see what's happening with Sri Lanka. Now, Sri Lanka is now so bad that people are out in the streets. This Sri Lankan government had dictatorial power just the other day. Just about 6 months back, when I had recorded another episode of Cut the Clutter, I think it was 826, and I will share a link with you, where we talked about one of the great follies that Rajapaksa's committed, which is shifting all of Sri Lanka's agriculture to organic method and banning all use of pesticides, insecticides, etc. At that point, he had imposed a national emergency. He had even appointed a major general from the army. As I had then mentioned, Sri Lanka has a lot of spare generals. So sparing one major general meant nothing. And that major general with his team was then supposed to go after hoarders, black marketeers, etc. But the fact is, why was there hoarding? There was hoarding because there were shortages. Why was there black market? There was black market because essential things were not available. So hoarding was profitable. And that happened also with a combination of extreme populism and dictatorial tendencies and dictatorial power, which was much greater than Imran Khan ever had in Pakistan. So Rajapaksa clan held almost all the power in Sri Lanka. They had 5 positions in the government, including president, prime minister, and finance minister. So they controlled everything, and they thought they had the mandate now to act like dictators. So they also amended the constitution, that is called the 20th Amendment in Sri Lanka, which gave their president enormous powers. It even gave the president and the government powers to fire and hire judges. So they destroyed all their institutions themselves. And now they have a situation where things are so bad and the credibility of the government is so bad that even the new finance minister they appointed, the earlier finance minister, who happens to be a brother of the president and the prime minister, he quit or he was made to quit. A new finance minister was appointed yesterday, that is Ali Sabri. He left within 24 hours because he must have figured that he's been handed over this dried lemon and told to make orange juice out of it, which wasn't going to happen. So he's also quit. Now, what is the situation today in Sri Lanka? 6 months back, when we had spoken in that episode 826, I had said that day, in fact, what sparked that episode of Karta Clutter was the fact that overnight, Sri Lankan rupee fell from 199 to 235 to the dollar because the government had done some stupid things like banning some trade. Sri Lanka used to have a very open economy. Sri Lanka almost had a Singapore-style economy. It was almost like a tax haven not long ago. But because the government suddenly brought in with dictatorial power exchange controls, there was run on the Sri Lankan rupee and it collapsed from 199 to 235 overnight to the dollar. As we speak today, within 6 months, it's now 311 to the dollar. And it's weakening all the time. So what happens then is when people import goods, they import on letters of credit. Those letters of credit are reckoned in dollar. By the time stuff comes to you and you are paying for it, your letters of credit are being encashed, the value of dollar has gone to something else and you simply don't have money to pay your banks. That is the trap in which Sri Lanka is caught right now. Once again, if you look at Sri Lankan government's borrowings, this has been a borrow and spend government. Government's borrowings as a percentage of GDP are about 124%, unsustainable. They've been negotiating with IMF and thereby lies the story also. So for a lot of the analysis and data on Sri Lanka or Sri Lankan economy, I'm also leaning on an article from Professor R. Ramkumar of Tata Institute of Social Sciences. The article was published in The Hindu and I'm sharing a link with you. So he points out what's been happening to Sri Lanka. And he in fact says that one of the reasons Sri Lanka has gone wrong is because it followed IMF's prescriptions, with which I don't fully agree, because the fact is that there is nothing in Sri Lanka's track record to show that it followed IMF's prescriptions. It signed up on those conditionalities but didn't follow them. For example, IMF, the first time they took a $2.6 billion bailout, $2.6 billion is a lot of money for Sri Lanka. Its total GDP is now just about $80 billion. So 2009, and you can imagine then a war had just taken place in the north, in Jaffna, LTT had just been defeated. Sri Lanka needed money, so that bailout was given and Sri Lanka had committed to reducing its deficit to 5% of GDP by 2011. That didn't work out. Another election took place. The new people made new populist promises. 2016, they went back to the IMF and they said, look, what happens when a loan goes bad? You give me a fresh loan. So you give me a fresh tranche of $1.5 billion and I will now bring down my deficit to 3.5% of GDP by 2020. What is the deficit in Sri Lanka now? It's 10% of Sri Lanka's GDP. So it's not as if anybody followed IMF's conditionalities. In fact, Sri Lanka has been in total violation of those conditionalities. Now, how did things go so wrong? That is because Rajapaksa had lost power. They had lost power and a coalition had come in. So they thought, when a fresh election took place, they thought, now promise the moon, right? People only look at what you are promising and then somebody will pay the bills later. What happened on the other hand was that the promises that the Rajapakshas made were so expansive and expensive and so unaffordable that the usual thing that politicians imagine didn't happen. That is, let me spend now and get votes and maybe my successor or future generations or my children's generation will pay for it. This was so expensive that they themselves are paying for it right now. They are reduced to a minority. And what are the promises they made? They said, first of all, that I will cut my GST by half. So GST in Sri Lanka, which was 15%, was cut to 8%. Now, that is not something that IMF had said. IMF had said, improve your tax collections, improve your, strengthen your tax administration. In this case, tax administration was weakened and massive tax cuts were given even on incomes. For example, if you came into the income tax paying bracket at 5 lakh Sri Lankan rupees salary per annum, it was now raised to 30 lakhs. So within 1 year, the number of registered taxpayers in Sri Lanka came down by 33.5%. This I take from Dr. Ramakumar's article. And he also says that in this process, the total tax loss to Sri Lanka was equivalent of 2% of GDP. Now that is a lot of money. And finally, what else did the Rajapakshas do? They also bought into this pseudoscience. Now, whoever gave him this idea, in fact, he thought when he implemented this in a draconian way, and we discussed this in Kartak Letter episode 826, he actually got widespread praise, particularly from EU countries. And he thought, fantastic, I have now risen in international stature. So this is the other problem that dictators who are also big successful populists have. They want global appreciation. They want global adulation. And he thought he was getting this praise from the Western world. When he spoke at the UN on climate change, he actually boasted about this. And he said, Sri Lanka will now set an example to the whole world. What happened in the process was that his output, agricultural output, went down by almost 30%. Because of that, he had to import even more. As he imported even more, his deficit went up. As his deficit went up, his currency weakened. As his currency weakened, the rupee cost, the Sri Lankan rupee cost of his imports went higher. So inflation went high. Now inflation in Sri Lanka at this point is about 19%. We are so scared of double digit inflation. It's 19% and rising. And rising at what rate? In February, it was 15.1%. In March, 18.7% and rising. So it's rising at that rate. So this is now a vicious circle that Sri Lankan economy is caught in, and that's taking the politics down also. And you know what? In the middle of all this, what is the food inflation in Sri Lanka? It is 30.1%. So in Pakistan, we said extreme populism with dictatorial methods and religion-laden nationalism. In case of Sri Lanka, it is extreme populism, extreme elected dictatorship, and really extreme lack of intellect or understanding and complete inability to listen to anybody else unless you are listening to the wrong kind of people.